synergy, the bonus that is achieved when things work together harmoniously.
Empowerment in education, two powerful elements that will help you break free of convention and transform your passion for wellness to a level beyond the status quo. The Essential Oil Revolution, where you're given the tools to supersede an ordinary everyday lifestyle. Inspiring speakers, DIY recipes, healthy living tips, and more. You'll discover it all here. So tune in and get ready for a wellness revolution.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. This is Samantha Lee Wright, your host. I'm so glad you're here. A quick word before we start today's episode out. Unfortunately, towards the end of the call, my internet started being really dumb and we kept dropping the Skype call, which is where we conduct most of our interviews here on the show. So towards the end of the episode, there may be some sentences that get cut off and I'll do my best to fill in the gaps, but I just wanted to warn you all that the quality of this call is less than what we usually like to give you here on the show. Now, that being said, let's get to this amazing interview. We talk so much about really how these oils work. We talk about synergy. We talk about how essential oils enhance supplements. So much great content. But before we get to the interview, of course, we don't want you to miss out on our weekly DIY dugout recipe. Today's DIY dugout recipe comes from Becky Cabanook in Brentwood, California. This recipe is called Clothes Cleaner on the Go. So to make a clothes cleaner on the go, simply put about 2 milliliters of the Thieves Household Cleaner in a 10 milliliter roller bottle and fill the rest with water. If you want, you can add a drop or two of lemon essential oil, and this will help get sticky gum out of clothes. A word of caution though, Becky does not recommend using this Thieves Cleaner on the go on white clothes until just before the washer due to the very slight Thieves Cleaner color left on clothes when dried. Awesome idea, Becky. I love it.
Hello, dear friends. As an essential oil user, I know that you have probably come to not only appreciate, but to actually expect the powerful shift in emotions that you can get instantaneously when smelling your essential oils. When someone's dealing with the complex emotion of grief, life can get pretty heavy. Although emotions and essential oils can both be good allies, sometimes more is needed. I want to introduce you to a new podcast called A Place of Yes that is now available wherever you listen to podcasts. The host of the show is Heather Strother. Heather actually had a severe loss when she lost her 4-year-old son, Jack, suddenly to medical complications. 13 years later, now Heather is sharing the only way that she could move forward from the loss. This was by channeling her grief for the good and finding a place of yes. Now, her and her husband have created a nonprofit organization called Jack's Help from Heaven. Since then, they've helped hundreds of families with medically fragile children raise more than $1 million to help them to purchase with items that are not just medically necessary, but also convenient. Their goal is to improve the quality of life, and it offers you an opportunity to learn strategies to cope with grief and how to truly be there for someone that you love that is grieving. Now, sometimes the guests aren't just talking about the loss of a child, but the loss of the life they thought that they were going to live. And I know that we can all relate to that. Please listen to A Place of Yes now wherever you listen to podcasts. And also visit our sponsor at jackshelpfromheaven.org/news/podcast and learn about Heather and Brian's incredible nonprofit organization.
Hello, dear friends. In today's world, it's hard to maintain balance in any area of life. This includes in regard to our hormones. Let's face it, stress impacts everyone, and this affects our hormones. Compound stress on top of an already fluctuating cycle, and not-so-happy symptoms can result. Thankfully, we have essential oils to tame our mind and body, but a lot of times, many women need something more to keep their hormones at a healthy level. And that something more is where Happy Mammoth comes in. And right now, they are generously offering you 15% off your first order when you visit happymammoth.com and use promo code REVOLUTION. Happy Mammoth is a forward-thinking, all-natural wellness brand. They are obsessed with empowering people with quality natural health solutions aimed at promoting total body health and vitality. I love their comprehensive formula, Hormone Harmony, which contains herbal extracts that help to support hormonal levels, stress, mood, resiliency, and blood sugar. In fact, it contains adaptogenic herbs that help the body adapt to any kind of stressors. This can help to keep hormones in much better balance. Due to its synergy, Hormone Harmony formulation can be used for women in perimenopause, menopause, and any female with symptoms of hormone imbalances. What I love as a naturopathic and functional medicine doctor is that their products are third-party tested for quality and purity, free of heavy metals, and free from artificial fillers. For all these reasons, I am confident recommending Happy Mammoth to my clients and grateful to be supplied with my own bottle for a happier mood and less bloated belly during that time of the month. I am so pleased to have a company that stands behind women's health and optimizing wellness through science and education. So please support Happy Mammoth and the show. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with promo code REVOLUTION at checkout. That's Happy MAMMOTH.com and use promo code REVOLUTION for 15% off your first order.
So everyone, I'm here with Doug Corrigan, who is a physicist and holds his PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology. And we are going to dive deep into the topic of essential oils and chemistry here on the show today, which we're super excited about. Doug, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here.
Oh, thank you so much, Samantha. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Well, let's just start with your background. Tell us a little bit more about what you do.
Okay. So I started out in physics. I was always very interested in science as a young boy and wanted to be a physicist. And I did that. I got my master's in physics, worked for NASA for a long period of time, and had a few experiments aboard the space shuttle. And then went to work for Oak Ridge National Lab, which is a Department of Energy-funded laboratory that does lots of really cool research. And I was a physicist there working on new materials. And then I decided to go back to school and switch gears and go into the life sciences. So I went back and did my PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology. And then soon after that, started a biotechnology company where we developed tools for the pharmaceutical industry. We developed research tools to help big pharma that develop drugs to discover drugs much faster, much more accurately, with higher efficiency, and to reduce errors in that process. So we developed a lot of innovative tools for the drug discovery industry. And that's where I really became familiar with westernized medicine and how that whole process works to research and develop and bring a new drug to market. We sold that business a number of years ago, and now I'm a consultant in the chemicals industry. That's how I basically, my career started in a different background.
So that's a very different background than I'd say most of our guests here are on the show. Yeah, it's a very scientific, chemical, Western background. So how did essential oils come into play?
So basically, that story's a little bit funny, actually. My wife, Amy.
Always the wife.
It's always the wife, right? So she loves candles. And she, at one point, was using candles all around the house. I was afraid of, well, one thing was she was going to burn down the house one day. And the second thing was the artificial scents and things like that that are used in the candles, I didn't like. They gave me headaches and things of that nature. So I really wanted to help her stop using candles. Now, at the same time, my wife was actually researching out essential oils for different reasons. A lot of her friends were using them and they were, telling her she should give them a try. And so she was wanting to get into essential oils and I was wanting her to stop using candles. So I bought her a kit for her birthday so that she would start using them to diffuse around the house and stop using the candles. And that, my plan actually worked. She stopped using the candles, but she had other plans for them. And I really wasn't knowledgeable or aware of these other, you know, uses. My main thing was, you know, you use essential oils for aroma. That's all I really thought they were good for at that point. So, but she started to explore the use of them for other things with our children, which I can't go into too much detail about, but we noticed some immediate, you know, benefits in our both of our little girls. That kind of surprised me when I saw that happen. And then some things that I couldn't explain with, you know, Western medicine, that piqued my curiosity to start exploring and doing a little bit of research to figure out what's going on. And that was about 4 years ago. So it took me about 2 years from the time Amy started using them until the time that I started to get really on board with being serious about them and realizing that they did have therapeutic qualities that were valid. So I had to re-gear my thought processes from Western pharmaceutical research to start to understand what, you know, how natural systems work. And so I had to recalibrate the way I thought, basically.
Yeah. So it's one thing to do research and start learning about the oils and basically falling in love with oils is one thing. But why did you decide that you wanted to start teaching about oils? And also kind of add on to that, did you catch any flack from your colleagues?
No, not really. I didn't catch too much flack. The reason I started to teach about them, because, you know, I started to buy all the books that were out there and you know, read them to figure out what's going on here. And what I noticed in all of the books and all of the resources that were out there for the average consumer, basically the book started out with, you know, maybe a little bit of history of essential oils going back thousands of years and all that. Then it would go right into chemical structures of the components that are found in essential oils, the molecules themselves, what they look like, the terpenes, the terpenoids, all of those, and what their chemical structures are. And then the book would then go into how to use them, how to apply them, how to diffuse them, how to apply them topically, how to ingest them, and what different oils can be used for. And so there was a huge gap in the middle that I saw in all of these resources that I was reading. No one was answering the question, well, how do they work? Why do they work? How do they work at the cellular level? What are they actually doing in your body at a molecular level? No one was answering that question. And so I found that because of that gap, I wanted to start A, you know, learning that material for myself, and then B, try to distill that down and put it into a format that the average person could understand. There's a huge need here. People want to know how they work. They want to know why they work. People want to have answers. You know, there's a lot of skeptical people out there, a lot of serious scientists that don't believe they work, that haven't been exposed to the material themselves, just like me. And I found out that if I could actually, you know, teach this material, then people would start taking the whole science of essential oils more seriously.
And in all your research, I mean, really, how different is Western medicine to natural medicine? Is it like two totally parallel universes, or do you think they overlap maybe more than we think?
They overlap more than we think, but they're also completely different. So I'll explain what I mean by that. So in Westernized drug discovery, the paradigm is you have one molecule, right? They design one molecule, and that one molecule has one job to actually, you know, seek out and find in your body a target. And that target is normally a protein that your body makes or a protein in the bacteria or virus makes. So there is one target and one drug, one compound, you know. So that's Western pharmaceutical. If you want to distill it down in a nutshell to people, what is the difference? The first thing is Western is medicine is one compound targeting one molecule. Natural medicine is many molecules working together and interacting with many different targets in your cells simultaneously all together. And so that's the major difference if you want to, you know, distill it down. And the way that actually manifests itself as a difference is in our cells, we have a very complex network of interactions taking place in all of our cells. And so scientists call this a cellular interaction network. And so you can imagine in our cells, there's many different biomolecules, proteins, that are moving around, and each has its own job to do in our cell. And so our body, human body, the human genome, makes about 1 million different proteins based on the genes that are in our DNA. So we actually synthesize 1 million different proteins. And each one of those proteins has a different function. Now, each of those proteins are communicating with one another. And so you can imagine if you were to try to graph this out, you would see this huge, you know, like a spider web of all these proteins interacting and communicating with one another. So that's what they call the cellular interaction network. So in Western medicine, you have one drug molecule that goes into that network and it seeks out one of those million proteins, let's say, and it tries to interact with that protein, either to block what it's doing or to make it work an accelerated or a better level. So you're interacting with the cellular interaction network at one point in the network. That what that does is that actually ripples throughout the network because there's no island. There is no island. There is no molecule in our cell. It doesn't communicate with other molecules. So when that drug molecule interacts with its targeted partner, that's going to ripple throughout the network and have unintended, unwanted side effects. What it does is it takes that cellular interaction network and puts it into a new state. It puts it into a skewed state of disequilibrium. It's not working at a level of homeostasis or equilibrium anymore because you're basically skewing it or perturbing it at one point that it wasn't designed to be perturbed at. So that's where the side effects come into play. Now, with natural medicine, where you have many molecules, each one of those molecules is now seeking out a partner inside the cellular interaction network and a different protein partner. So in an essential oil can have anywhere from 20 up to 300 different constituents inside that essential oil mixture. So imagine 300 different chemicals, each interacting with a different protein partner that's in that cellular interaction network. Now you have push and pull, you have give and take, you have equilibrium being restored to the cell in a more holistic way because you're not skewing it at one spot. And this is where synergies start to take place, where you have new activities being realized that any one of the compounds can't handle on its own. And you have antagonism, which is basically where multiple molecules will basically quench the activity of others that may be toxic. So with a drug compound, a pharmaceutical drug compound, where you have these side effects, those side effects are there because there's no other molecules that are coming in to try to mitigate the damage, right? So they're not interacting at other parts in the network to mitigate the side effects. Now, in an essential oil, you have multiple constituents. If there's one particular constituent that would be toxic by itself, it's not toxic in the context in the presence of these other molecules because there's this antagonism or quenching effect that takes place. So you have both synergies and you have antagonisms that take place that reduce side effects, but also that cause new levels of synergistic activity that are not realized with pharmaceutical drugs. So the bottom line is with pharmaceutical drugs, you never have the opportunity for synergy and you never have the opportunity to mitigate side effects.
Right. And also another factor is as well the size of the molecule. Is that right?
Well, you know, quite surprisingly, most of the size of the molecules that are in essential oils are on the order of the same size of most pharmaceutical drug compounds. The actual size of them are comparatively the same. So most people don't know this, but over 50% of pharmaceutical drugs are inspired or directly copied from natural chemicals found in nature. So molecules found in plants, in fungi, in bacteria, in all kinds of natural sources, algae, so over 50%. And Dr. David Newman, who is a renowned researcher at the National Institutes of Health, he's retired now, but he used to run the natural products division of the National Institute of Health for the National Cancer Institute. And he was a world-renowned expert in natural products and their efficacy. And he published lots of papers looking at pharmaceutical drugs that have been developed over the last, 30 years. And he cataloged over 1,200 different drugs and looked at them. And he found out that over 53% of them developed over the last 20 years were either inspired or directly copied from compounds found in nature. So this is a telling thing, that there's obviously powerful medicinal properties found in natural products, and the pharmaceutical industry knows this, okay? And they seek those molecular structures out in the plants as a starting point to develop their drugs. Now, what they do is they want to patent these drug molecules because they want a monopoly on the market, and they want to block other companies from competing with them. So to do that, there's only one way legally to do that, and that's to have a patent on a molecule. And the only way you can patent a molecule is if it's a novel, design. And so just simply finding a molecule in nature and patenting that is not something that's going to reward the companies financially. So what they do is they either modify the compounds to become some unique aspect to it, or they're also trying to derivatize the compounds to reduce their side effects and things that make them more bioavailable, because they're not in the context of the other compounds, right? So now they have to modify that compound to try to, reduce its side effects, but also make it bioavailable. Now, when an essential oil is being used, all of those molecules are more bioavailable because they're in the presence of the other molecules. When they're isolated from their other partners, they become less bioavailable and they start to have toxicity associated with them. So this is going to be true. So when a pharmaceutical industry isolates a molecule and tries to, patent that molecule, they've got to change that molecule to mitigate the side effects and to make it more bioavailable and to make it a novel structure so they can patent it. So that's sort of the basis of but the big to realize there is that a lot of these molecules we're taking today are actually products from a natural source. And, I can give you examples of that. Back in the 1800s is when drug discovery really started. In 1805, morphine, okay, that's from a plant, okay, first isolated chemical from a plant that was a drug, morphine.
Yeah. Do you know which plant that came from?
Papaver somniferum.
Ah.
Poppy.
Oh, right. Of course.
Codeine. Codeine from the same plant.
Mm-hmm.
Atropine.
Yeah.
Ephedrine.
So fascinating. So much of what you're talking about, we could probably go on tangent forever just about the whole patent issue in general. I mean, that affects so much. It's the reason why essential oils, we can't talk about them in certain ways, because you can't patent a natural substance. You can't patent an essential oil. Therefore, you can't market it as medicine or anything like that. So it's interesting how these kind of legal issues can affect little things and big things at the same time. So that's so fascinating. But oh my gosh, I have so many questions that you've been bringing up in my head. This one is a little bit random, but when you keep saying proteins, it kind of reminds me of something that I heard that I've never been able to verify. So I'm hoping that you can maybe verify this. I was told that it's virtually impossible to have a true allergy to an essential oil, since allergies typically come from a reaction to a protein. And someone told me once that proteins are not actually in essential oils. So do you have any insights on that or clarification?
Yeah, I can clarify that. First off, in distilled essential oils, there's different ways to get essential oils, right? So you can distill them out of the plant with steam. Okay, so when that happens, the steam is not going to basically carry any proteins over into the distillate because the protein molecules are too large, right? So you're not going to have proteins in a distilled essential oil. In a cold press essential oil, like from the rind of a lemon, where they take the actual peel and they press the rind, so in the citrus types of oils, there could be, definitely could be proteins carrying over from the rinds that could provide an allergic source. Now, it's a common misnomer that the only molecules that can provide allergic responses are protein.
Okay.
Okay, so that's number one. That's erroneous. That's fallacious. You know, that's not true. So there are other smaller molecules that can elicit allergic responses, and they're called haptens, H-A-P-T-E-N-S. And what haptens do is they're small molecules like the molecules that are found in essential oils, and they can chemically react with other proteins in our body. And when they interact with those proteins in our body and chemically interact with them, then that protein has been modified, right? With that that smaller chemical, and now that protein becomes allergic. So it's transforming an already existing protein in our body into an allergen. So that's the process of called haptenization. And that can occur with certain essential oil compounds like cinnamaldehyde, okay, is a common one that can produce an haptenization response. Now, that is very rare, and it's usually something that takes place if somebody's not diluting their essential oils and they're using them for a long period of time at elevated levels like that, then there could be, because an allergic reaction is a sensitization reaction. So it's from chronic exposures, and there's a certain threshold. Once you exceed that, then this allergic response can kick in. Then you can get an allergic response to certain essentials. Now, like I said, it's rare. But I think it's, because I hear this going around in the essential oil community all the time, that you can't be allergic to essential oils. It's impossible because they don't have proteins. Well, number one, citrus ones can have proteins if it's stress. And number two, the haptens are a common thing. And you can go look that up in PubMed, look up hapten, you'll find plenty of research articles on them.
So it is rare, but possible, bottom line. So that's good to know. Awesome. All right, I'm back with Doug Corrigan, who is a biophysicist, and we are talking all about the chemistry of essential oils. We're diving in deep, folks. So now let's talk about essential oils. How are they so effective on the molecular level?
We talked about one of the aspects, which is synergy, okay? And I want to talk more about synergy a little bit so people understand. And the analogy I give is a soccer team. All right, so if you have a soccer team, you have 11 players on the field for each team, right? Now, if you have, let's say a soccer team has 11, and then you have another team and says, we're only going to have one person on the field, all right, and we're going to play a game. Now, these are professional soccer players. They all have equal skill levels, okay? So you have one person on the field against 11. How many goals is that one person going to score against the team of 11? Zero. Right? They're going to score zero goals at the end of that game. Now let's put two players on the field and play the game. How many against 11? They're going to score zero. Let's put three players on the field. Still going to score zero, right? They're going to have to get up to somewhere around 10 players before they're even going to have the chance of probably scoring a goal against that professional soccer team. So with synergy, so think about this, zero, one player is a zero. A second player is zero. So you have zero plus zero. What is that? That's zero. Zero plus zero plus zero plus zero plus zero plus zero plus zero. Now, all of a sudden, you get it, you can score, right? So if you sum up all the zeros, if you get 11 players and sum up 11 zeros, you would get zero. But they actually can score now because they're acting together as a team. So now you have synergy. So synergy is this. It could be 1 + 1 = 3. But it also can be 0 + 0 = 4, okay? So you could have a compound that has no activity at all and another compound that has no activity at all, and you put the two together, and now they have activity. So to give you a simple example of how that actually can happen, think about a door, okay? And there's two molecules. One molecule has the therapeutic action, okay? But it's got to get through the door to go inside somewhere else inside the cell to actually do its job. But it can't open the door. It doesn't have the key, right? So it's just sitting at the door waiting to get in your cell, but it can't. But another molecule has the key. It can open the door. But that molecule that has the key can't go inside the cell and do anything beneficial. It can only open the door. So that molecule by itself is going to be able to do nothing. The other molecule by itself is going to be able to do nothing. But when you put the two together, one opens the door, and the other one goes in and does its job. So this happens all the time with essential oils. And this is something that's not possible with Western drug discovery because there is no synergy that can take place because it's only one molecule. To give you some examples, specific examples of that, you can look at for antibacterial action. Now, I'm talking about constituents now, so I'm remaining compliant.
Yeah. So, yeah, just for the record, we're not talking about essential oils right now. We're just talking about individual chemical constituents, right?
Right.
Awesome.
So, if you look at Neural and Geranal, which are basically, if you put those two together, it's called citral. So citral by itself has a certain level of antibacterial activity. If you add just a tiny bit of myrcene, which is another constituent, the antibacterial activity goes through the roof. Okay, just that presence of just a little bit of myrcene creates an entirely new condition. So that's synergy. Another example, antibacterial synergy, is so if you take citronellal, okay, and citronellol, two different constituents, and you put them together, they will have a fourfold synergy. So 1 + 1 = 4, right? But that only happens if they occur in their natural ratio of 90 to 7.5. So you have to have 90 of one to 7.5 of the other for that fourfold synergy to take place. Another example, pinene, which is a constituent, and it's a major constituent in many different essential oils, it itself has virtually no anti-inflammatory activity. But if you just put in a tiny bit of thymol and carvacrol, which are two other constituents, it has powerful anti-inflammatory effects. And it only takes a tiny, so that's where I was saying before on the soccer team, you have 0 + 0, you know, you have nothing. But if you add enough players on the field, now you can have something. So that's exactly what's happening with essential oils. And this is why you can't build an essential oil from artificial ingredients and try to resynthesize or reconstitute the oil. And this is what a lot of the cheap manufacturers of essential oils are doing. They're putting together constituents, putting them together, reconstituting them into a blend based on synthetic components. So they're synthesizing pinene or they're synthesizing limonene, right? And then they're blending maybe a dozen of these or more to try to mimic an essential oil, okay, and pass it off as in a natural essential oil. But they're missing all of the other components. So they're missing the synergistic interactions that take place. So that's why you cannot just go use a cheap, you know, off-the-shelf essential oil if you don't know how it was made.
Right. You lose all the synergy because you're just trying to fake it. You can't fake synergy, folks, right?
Right. Because the individual constituents is not where the activity is at.
Right. That is so fascinating. You make science really fun. Chemistry was my least favorite subject in high school. I hated it. And you're making it really, really fun. So thanks, Doug. Well, that was so fascinating. This kind of reminds me of another question I hope I can spring on you. I didn't prep you for this one, but I keep hearing this term that the fact that Young Living adds essential oils to all of their supplements, their vitamins, their nutritional products, makes those supplements and whatnot more bioavailable for the body. Can you explain what that means and how we know that works?
Yes. So that is an area of active research. There are a lot of research papers out there, even in the major pharmaceutical world, where they're trying to use essential oil compounds to increase the permeability of epithelial tissue, which is your skin, but you also have, you know, tissue inside your gastrointestinal tract or wherever you're trying to absorb molecules into. And it is a well-known phenomenon that essential oil molecules can help the transdermal, basically, delivery of other molecules, because essential oil molecules are small and they're what they call lipophilic, which means that they love to be in the presence of other lipids or fats. And a lot of the tissue in our body is lipophilic, meaning it has, you know, the cell membrane itself is lipophilic, right? Because it's made up of phospholipids, which are fats. The areas in between cells have lipid matrices, basically extracellular matrix around the cells are lipids. And so like wants to dissolve like. I don't know if you remember that from chemistry, but fatty things like to dissolve fatty things, and water-based things like to dissolve water-based things, and the two don't like to mix. And so when you put something in the presence of an essential oil, it can act as a carrier to help transport those molecules, whether it's a nutrient or a drug, okay, and you're trying to deliver that into your tissues, the essential oils can help get into those lipid areas and make it more soluble. So it does increase the bioactivity. There's patents, there's people trying to patent this now. But it's a well-known sort of thing. But there's a lot more research that needs to be done, like which essential oils, which constituents, what percentage of constituents do you need? Is there a difference among all of the different essential oils? You know, those types of questions haven't been fully answered.
Right. Speaking of, I mean, if you could like wave a magic wand and just close the gaps happening in terms of research for essential oil-based therapies, you know, what would that look like?
Oh, there's so much that needs to be done. Like the area of synergy, I think, is the number one area where they really need to understand. Because you can imagine, I just talked about two, you know, adding two constituents together, and now you start to get synergy. How about three, four? Up to 300, right? Because an essential oil can have 300. No one's ever mapped that all out. Nobody knows. I mean, they have very limited examples of these synergies in the research literature that they all sort of always cite. You know, they always cite these few examples and they know it happens, but there's just not a whole lot of research money out there for this type of research. Because, you know, the big governmental agencies like the National Institutes of Health and the funding agencies, the governmental research funding agency, all funnel money, you know, 99% of it goes into westernized type of research.
Because it's patentable.
Yeah, of course. Right. And then the big pharmaceutical companies are, of course, spending their dollars on Western. There is research money out there for natural, but it's, you know, 1%, let's say, of what everyone else is getting. So a lot of these questions aren't answered, like synergy. I would like to see research done on mapping out all of the protein targets that are targeted by the essential oil molecules. There's also examples that are known from that, like, for example, beta-carotene, BCP, is known to be an interactor with cannabinoid 2 receptor, CB2 receptor, in our bodies, which are in our immune cells. And that interaction causes a reduction of inflammation when that BCP molecule binds to the CB2 receptor, you have reduced inflammation. And there's other examples known, for example, boswellic acid, and you might have heard of that. Boswellic acid will interact with an enzyme called lipoxygenase, which also reduces inflammation in our body. So there's some of these protein targets are known, but no one has ever mapped out all the interactions that take place between the molecules in an essential oil and the protein biomolecules that are in our cells. And so that's another active area of research that needs to be done. Another, I think, is gene expression changes. So we all have genes. They get turned on, they get turned off, okay? The genes are what basically manufacture all of the proteins in our body. So when they get turned on, that protein level goes up, and when they get turned off, that protein level goes down for that gene. So when you take an essential oil or you're using an essential oil, does it change the level of activity of your gene, the gene expression levels? How much each gene is turned on or turned off? Are those affected by the essential oils. I think that's another active area of research. Another would be genetic differences. So in pharmaceutical research, there's an area called pharmacogenomics, which means everyone responds differently to a drug, right? So you might have some people that respond to Lipitor and other people that don't. You have people that, you know, it's toxic to them, but it's not to others. You know, this is common with every drug that's out there. There's certain people that respond to it and certain people that don't. And that's because of difference in genetics, right? So those genetic differences play a role in how people respond to essential oils. My guess, based on what I know, is no. You know, because of these synergies and because of the, you know, hundreds of interactions taking place, the chances that someone's going to have multiple mutations in their DNA that would ward off every single one of those interactions is very small. But I would like to see research to prove that point, that, you know, the essential oil that works on this person is going to work on that person too. So I think that's another benefit of, you know, the natural approach to things. And of course, what everyone wants to see more of is just more clinical data, clinical studies, clinical research. And those are really expensive studies because now you're enlisting human subjects and you have tons of liability and all of that. So these clinical studies that have been done on essential oils are usually very small sample sizes, and there's not a whole lot of them you can go out there and reference. So a lot of the knowledge that's been gained about what oils work on what is from the past, you know, from these ancient cultures like China and India, looking at their how they've recorded these things over the centuries. And so that's sort of more like a tribal knowledge that's come into our modern day, but it hasn't been translated into the Western body of research that's published in peer-reviewed literature that most academics are going to look at and say, yeah, I believe that. So that, I think that transition needs to take place. But again, that's going to take lots of money. So there's going to have to be benefactors or people that, you know, billionaires or whatever, pull their money together to do this type of research, because the big pharma is not going to fund it. And probably the governments aren't either. So it's going to have to be something that is cooperatively funded by individuals and, you know, other folks that may have capital resources that other people don't have to help move this forward.
Well, for now, there's just, you know, how many Young Living members now? A million, something.
I think there's a million. Yeah.
So right now, I guess we're the guinea pigs. You know, we're figuring it all out. We're testing ourselves out. And
it's like human is one big, huge clinical trial.
Exactly. It's so funny that, you know, of course you come across these articles on the web all the time that, you know, oh my God, these people that are using all these oils, they're going to kill their babies and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And just really saying all these ridiculous things about essential oils being harmful to the body. And like, look at all these millions of people that are using these oils every day. But is there any like scientific slap in the face, if it is, as it were, that you could give people that make claims that, you know, oh, you shouldn't ingest oils, it's going to kill your bacteria, or, you know, you shouldn't ingest oils because oil and water don't mix, or you shouldn't use oils undiluted, it'll kill you, basically. And I'm being facetious, but I wanted to know your thoughts on that.
Okay, so I say to them, I always say, you can die if you drink too much water. That's a clinical fact, right? If you drink too much water, you will die. So every single molecule in nature, there is a profile to it. So concentration, activity profile. Below a certain threshold concentration, there is some type of benefit. Okay, so you increase the concentration and the benefit goes up. After a certain concentration, the benefit stops going away and other negative things start to take place. So you can imagine if you were to graph this out, it would be a peak somewhere. And it's true for water and everything else. If you eat too many bananas, you'll die, you know.
Right.
So is there a limit to oils you can take? Yes, of course. Every molecule in nature, there's a limit to what is considered to be healthy and unhealthy. So with essential oils, there is a resource out there, the Safety of Essential Oils, which was published by Tisserand, where you went through all of the literature, okay, and tried to quantify where those toxicity limits are for just about every essential oil that's out there. And you can go look these up. Okay, now the good news is that the amount of essential oil that you would need to take to, you know, harm your body is quite large. So yes, yeah, so to answer your question, it varies from oil to oil. And it also varies from person to person of what those limits are. And there's a lot of unknowns there as well. So, but the good news is you have, like you said before, you have millions of people using essential oils. And the number of cases that have been reported of adverse reactions is so small. I mean, it's, you know, a handful. And in a lot of those cases, you can just see that it was, they did something stupid or they were using something that wasn't therapeutic, you know, pure. There's not a whole lot of data out there that says if you use essential oils, it's going to be dangerous.
So Sam here, just wanted to interject and let you know this is where the call kind of dropped off and then we connected again, but the quality was a little bit lower and I got the hiccups while we were rebooting Skype. But here is the rest of the interview for you. Where's the best place for people to go if they're really interested in this topic? They want all the answers. They want to know it all. Basically, clone you and just keep you in their pockets.
I don't know everything, and there's just some. I'm always learning new stuff every day. They can come to our Facebook group, which is Shedding Light on Essential Oils with Doug and Amy. That's on Facebook if they're there. And all the classes I do are free. Of course, good books out there, and I tend to just go directly to PubMed. That's where I do all my research. I look PubMed first and, you know, Google. If you want to use Google, here's my recommendation. When you go into Google, type Google Scholar. And it only searches research literature and patents. And you can click patents off if you don't want to see patents and books too. So you can kind of, if you want to get rid of all of the blogs and the marketing, because when you go into Google and you start searching anything about essential oils, you're going to deal with 30 to 40 pages of just memes and blogs and just marketing stuff. And none of that, I wouldn't rely on any of that for your information or knowledge. So go to Google Scholar first, and you'll find all kinds of research articles that you can look. Now, you're going to have to start learning some of the lingo. You're going to have to start, because you're going to be reading abstracts and research papers that are actually published in scientific literature at that point. But that's where I always go.
Well, what a valuable resource. So just thank you for making that public to everyone. Shedding Light on Essential Oils with Doug and Amy Facebook group. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Doug. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show.
The Essential Oil Revolution is created by me, Samantha Lee Wright. You can connect with me on Instagram at Sam Lee Wright or on Facebook at Essential Oil Revolution Podcast. Our website is revolutionoilspodcast.com. There you can find a link to our sponsors, shop our most popular items, and find more detailed show notes for every episode. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, consider sharing it with a friend or leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It helps other people find this show, and your kind words also make me cry a little, not gonna lie. You can submit up to 5 recipes a year into our DIY dugout, which makes you automatically enter to win our monthly giveaways. Simply email us your name, your original essential oil recipe, and where you're from or your website to DIY@revolutionoilspodcast.com. You can also send us in your episode ideas or your personal essential oil success stories. With your permission, we can share your testimonial with everyone right here on the show. Go the extra mile and consider recording your story in a video. Send it in and we can extract the audio and share it here with our listeners. Use a pair of earbuds or a microphone and tell us about how essential oils have helped you. Make sure you're subscribed to the show so you can get new episodes downloaded while you sleep. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and more. And you can also tell Alexa, "Hey Alexa, play the Essential Oil Revolution podcast," and she'll do it. Pretty cool, huh? I can't thank you enough for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of the revolution. We'll catch you here next week. In the meantime, keep on learning, keep on discovering, and most importantly, keep on treating yourself well. You are worth it.